Hello and welcome to the new episode of Death and Taxes, a podcast by the private client team at Burgess Salmon. My name is Edward Hayes and I'm a tax and trust lawyer in the private client team at Burgess Salmon. And together with my tax and trust colleagues, Guy Broadfield and Tim Williams, we will discuss a range of issues facing clients and professionals alike. Each episode, we'll be joined by specialist lawyers from around the firm and we'll bring you their views on important topics for the industry. In today's podcast, we will be looking at what you need to know about second homes, how they're taxed and how to hold them. And we're joined by Scarlett Underwood from our tax and trust team.
On today's episode of Death and Taxes, we are going to look at second homes and the issues relevant to owners of those types of property. There's been speculation recently about some upcoming changes in the budget which might affect second homeowners in terms of tax increases. We're also coming to the end of the stamp duty land tax holiday, which might have made life slightly easier for people who bought second homes recently. But leaving aside the sort of political controversy about second homes for now, Ed, you thought it was a good idea to revisit ownership of second homes, how they're structured and what the issues for second homeowners are.
Exactly, and thank you, Guy. I think we thought today, first of all, worth stressing, we're talking about second homes, not investment properties you're going to let. Some of the things we'll mention are relevant to those as well, but it's a focus on properties you're going to occupy either as a holiday home or as a genuine second home. And the three things we wanted to cover briefly were, how do you hold a second home? Is it just in your own name or is there any special structuring you should be thinking about? How is the property taxed from purchase, holding it, and then disposing of it? We'll do a quick run through of those key taxes. And finally, we have these upcoming changes to the SDLT rules for non-UK residents. And so we'll do a little bit of a run through of those and how we're expecting those to make changes in practice.
Thanks very much for that, Ed. Okay, so first off, we're going to look at ownership. And Scarlett, perhaps it would be helpful if you could just explain what the structure for ownership of second homes has been historically and what's common, more common now.
Thanks, Guy. So, yeah, historically, from a tax perspective, it's often been beneficial to hold a second home through a company. But principally in recent years, a lot of the tax benefits have dwindled away. So this kind of coincides with the introduction of the annual tax on envelope dwellings, the higher rates of stamp duty land tax that have been introduced for companies purchasing properties, and crucially, the taking away of the IHT protections. So on the whole, there have been quite a lot of tax changes in recent years that make it a lot more favourable to structure a property purchase in your personal name rather than opting for a company structure.
Okay, so I think because of that shift, for the purposes of today's pod, we will focus on property that's been purchased and owned by individuals in their own name. Of course, there are other reasons why you might wish to purchase through a trust or indeed a company, notwithstanding the tax disadvantages of doing so, but we'll come on to talk about those. So, Scarlett, in terms of individuals, what are we looking at for the main tax points?
So there are a number of different tax points to consider. The first would be on purchasing property, and there would be a charge to stamp duty land tax. So this is a slab-based system. It's been around in some kind of form since the 1980s, but in recent years, the rates have increased quite considerably. So you'd want to be aware of a 3% surcharge on second homes, which came into effect on the 1st of April 2016. So this would imply, in addition to the rates of stamp duty land tax on like a normal residential purchase. So, and then in addition to this, there is an enveloped rate for companies. So this is kind of a reason why you wouldn't want to buy a second home through a company structure, because the 3% rate applies on top of the normal residential purchase rates.
Yeah, so it's worth saying at the moment, so we've got the stamp duty land tax holiday, which means you don't pay any stamp duty up to purchase £500,000, but this 3% rate still applies, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, that's right. And the stamp duty land tax holiday is due to come to an end on the 31st of March. So in terms of getting to benefit from that now, chances are probably quite slim if you need some kind of financing in place. So talking about from the 1st of April onwards, these rates will continue to apply when the stamp duty land tax holiday is no longer in place. So in terms of ongoing tax requirements from your ownership of the property, personal ownership, you generally only really have council tax payments, which is kind of a marginal amount that pays for utilities in the area. It's not really anything that is quite large in value.
Although, yeah, it should be said, might be subject to reform. Watch this space in future budgets. A topic for another pod, no doubt, but at the moment, not significant outgoing.
No, watch this space. At the moment. Then in addition to this, so this is another reason why you perhaps wouldn't want corporate ownership, is because you could inadvertently trigger an income tax charge, or for example, the ATED charges that were first introduced in 2013 are quite considerable. So this is an annual tax that's paid, levied on the value of your property, and it's paid principally for the benefit of holding it in a corporate structure, and that is all. And they range from about £3,700 all the way up to £236,000 for properties at the top of the market. There are some exemptions to that for commercially let and property development businesses, but generally with second homes, they won't really apply. So then, as well as this, when you come on to sell your property, your second home, you will also be subject to capital gains tax on the disposal. So for UK resident individuals, this will be the capital gains tax regime. And for non-UK resident individuals, this will be the non-resident capital gains tax regime, which was introduced in April 2015. The top rate of capital gains tax and non-resident capital gains tax that applies is 28%, and that is chargeable on any capital gain that you've made during your ownership. It's worth noting that for non-resident capital gains tax, the values can be rebased to April 2015 when the regime first came into effect. Lots of people don't tend to think about capital gains tax in relation to their main home, and that's because it often benefits from principal private residence relief, which has the effect of kind of relieving any capital gains tax due. But that won't apply generally on second homes.
Exactly, Scarlett. I think there's a useful question there as to what is a second home for capital gains tax purposes, because that main residence relief, as it's often known, is very straightforward when you only own one property. When you own multiple properties, there is a question as to, well, which one of those is your main residence? And the default position, if you don't do anything about that, is that HMRC get to decide, and they will usually look at the pattern of your occupation and make a kind of factual assessment as to which one of those properties is your main home. So if you're buying something as a second home, it's unlikely probably to qualify as your main home on a factual basis. But importantly, you don't have to leave it to HMRC, and actually taxpayers are entitled to make what's called a PPR election. And they can basically write to HMRC and say, I own multiple properties, but I want to treat this one of my properties as my main home for the purposes of this relief. You can only ever have one of your homes elected at any given time, but you can change over the course of time. You generally have 2 years to make an election after your combination of properties own changes. So usually after you've bought another property, you get 2 years to decide what combination you want and which one should be your main home for these purposes. Important to say that you can only elect for a property to be your main home if it is your home in some respect. So if you're purely using it as a holiday home a couple of weeks a year or something, you probably can't make that election. But if it is one of your homes and you just spend less time there than in another home, it's worth considering. If you're a UK resident, then the kind of factors you want to think about when deciding which one to elect for are going to be, well, which is your most valuable and which has the most scope for growth in value, because you're probably going to want to protect the gains on the one that has the potential to generate the most gains. If you're a non-UK resident, then it's really worth thinking about focusing that protection on your UK homes. If you, say, have a home outside of the UK and one home in the UK, then if you're a non-UK resident, the home outside of the UK is going to be outside of the scope of capital gains tax in any case, and it's only the home in the UK that could be subject to capital gains tax at all. Therefore, you're probably going to want to elect for that to be your main home for capital gains tax purposes. So it's worth thinking about that if you do have multiple homes. And the other point to think about, maybe not on the disposal of the property, but sadly people don't last forever, on your death you've got IHT to worry about, and the inheritance tax rates at the moment, the top rate's 40%. If you're UK domiciled, that will apply to your worldwide estate, and if you're non-UK domiciled, then it's just on your UK assets, of which a second home is going to be probably quite a significant proportion. And the main way that people now tend to try and guard against inheritance tax exposure on property purchases, if they're non-domiciled, is simply to buy with debt. Because if you borrow funds to purchase, then generally speaking, that will be deductible from the value of the property in your estate. And so if you buy a £500,000 property, but you've got a £300,000 mortgage on that, only £200,000 of value is going into your estate for inheritance tax purposes. You've got to be quite careful about how you use the borrowings and exactly when it's taken out and when it's charged on the property, because it's easy to fall foul of some rules that then disqualify the lending as a deduction. But that borrowing against property is a key advantage of or a key option in terms of guarding against inheritance tax liability. And that pretty much sums up the high level points on how these properties are currently taxed when you buy, hold and dispose of them. I think it's now probably time to talk about what we're thinking is coming through in April and the changes for non-UK residents.
Okay, so if we now look ahead to future tax changes, I think they broadly fall into two categories. There's the tax changes that we know about, that we know are going to be introduced, and Scarlett, you can come on to talk about those. And there's also speculation about future possible tax changes that might affect second home owners. So Scarlett, in terms of what we know, what's going to come in the near future?
So we know that there will be an SDLT surcharge of 2% introduced for non-resident purchases from the 1st of April 2021. There will be a short transitionary period from March to April for exchanges that take place, I think, prior to the 11th of March. We have been anticipating this change for quite a while. So we first knew about it in 2019, and it was proposed that there would be a 1% surcharge. In March 2020, this was increased to a 2% surcharge. So we've had quite a lot of notice of it.
And so that's an extra 2% on the normal rates that would otherwise apply.
Yes, and that's
presumably,
right.
Sorry. Is that an extra 2% on top of the additional 3% if you're also buying a second home?
Yep, so that's completely right. So to give you an example of kind of the price differences here, if you take a £500,000 property, if this was your sole residence, you don't own any properties anywhere else in the world, you can expect to pay an SDLT liability of £15,000 on the purchase price. So this is applicable in England and Northern Ireland. It's worth bearing in mind that there are different rates in Scotland and Wales. But compare this with if you already own a property anywhere else in the world, so this is your second home, so a 3% surcharge will apply already. So that gives you an SDLT liability of £30,000. If you happen to be a non-resident purchaser of the property from the 1st of April 2021, and again with the property price of £500,000, and it is your second home, you will have an SDLT liability of around £40,000. So quite a stark difference in figures there, considering it's 2% extra on a £500,000 home. That is £10,000 extra.
And in terms of jurisdictions, is it, which jurisdictions is applying to, Scarlett?
So this is only applicable in England and Northern Ireland at the moment. There aren't any plans to extend it, I think, to Scotland and Wales.
So someone buying a lovely property up in the Highlands at the moment doesn't need to worry about this. But if you're getting something in a flat in London or something, it's going to be very important.
Yes, definitely. Definitely something to bear in mind.
And worth saying it's 2% on each band, isn't it?
Yes, 2% on each band.
And the key thing I wanted to get into actually was this whole, the idea of residents, UK residents and non-residents, because I think it would be perfectly reasonable to assume that the residence test here is the statutory residence test that we all know and love. In terms of working out whether you're resident in the UK for income tax and capital gains tax normally. But unhelpfully, it is not. It is a bespoke residence test just for SDLT. So it is really crucial for taxpayers to understand that you can be non-UK resident under the traditional statutory residence test and be resident under this specific SDLT test, or you can be tax resident under the traditional SRT test and non-resident under the specific SDLT test. So you need to make sure that you test your residence according to this specific SDLT threshold. And the way it works broadly is you have to look at the 2 years that cover the purchase, so the year before the purchase and the year after the purchase. And if there is any 12-month period within that overall two-year period within which you spend 183 days in the UK, then you're going to be treated as UK resident. So it's a bit of additional complexity in terms of working out your position. It's also worth focusing in on joint purchases, because if you are buying with a spouse or civil partner with whom you live, then actually as long as one of you is UK resident under that test, you both count as UK residents, so the surcharge won't apply. Compare that to joint purchases with other people, I don't know whether it's business partners or family and friends, for example. The reverse rule applies. If any of you are non-UK resident under the SDLT test, then the surcharge will apply. So it's particularly complicated for joint purchases. And there are also specific rules that apply if the purchaser is a company or a trustee. Broadly, the company position is actually a little bit simpler, subject to a couple of caveats. Then, as long as the company is non-UK resident for corporation tax purposes at the date of completion, it's probably going to be it will be treated as non-UK resident for the purposes of the surcharge. So if you've got a non-UK resident company, you just look at the date of completion normally. That's a bit more straightforward. If you've got a trust, if it's a bare trustee or a trustee of a life interest trust, so a trust where the beneficiary is entitled to the income from the property, you're generally going to look at the status of the beneficiary and not the trustee. So again, a bit of additional complexity for trusts as compared to individual purchases. But we're going to see this coming in. I think it could make obviously quite a big difference to those looking to buy property in the UK. Property at the moment is quite expensive, at least it's still going up in value. We'll see what happens obviously with the impact of Brexit and COVID and whether there's some big market changes. But right now it's looking like it's very shortly going to be a very expensive time for non-UK residents to be buying second homes in the UK.
And a good reason, Ed, for not least the complexity that you've outlined, to take good detailed legal advice on your tax position when it comes to those type of purchases. So thank you for that. And thank you, Scarlett, for outlining those changes. I mean, in terms of, if we look into our crystal ball now, what do we think about other tax increases that might impact second home owners? Obviously, this episode is being recorded before the budget on the 3rd of March. There might be announcements there that could affect second home owners, or indeed over the next couple of years, who knows quite where we'll be from a tax point of view. But what are your instincts at the moment, Scarlett?
So I think probably the most obvious choice would be to raise capital gains tax rates, which there's been speculation about previously. So for example, they could raise the lower rate of 18% for residential property up to 20% and just have a flat rate of 28%. That'd be sure to generate some extra revenue. They could also possibly increase the non-resident capital gains tax rates if they're targeting non-resident purchases of UK residential property.
Yeah, I think it's worth saying, isn't it, that because non-resident CGT is already a separate tax in some respects, it is possible for them to distinguish between UK residents and non-UK residents who are disposing of land. And in some ways, their ability to do that has actually been increased post-Brexit, because they won't be under pressure from the EU about treating everyone equally, which in the past has actually meant that some of these rules have had to be a bit more carefully crafted. I think the key point I would want to get across to anyone listening is that when buying a second home or advising a client on buying a second home, you really want to be taking advice in advance, because even the taxes that are focused on disposal or death, such as capital gains tax and inheritance tax, the kind of things that we recommend doing to help minimize those taxes or mitigate them, most of those actions actually take place around purchase time or shortly thereafter. So, for example, making a main residence selection or putting in place borrowing to mitigate IHT. Lots of these steps, you only really get one shot and it's quite early on in the process. So a key takeaway from this podcast is hopefully, if someone's thinking of buying a second home, get proper advice at the outset, look at all the tax implications and look at kind of options well ahead. Don't just buy it and then think, well, I'll sort out the structure later, because actually you might find it's too late to do anything meaningful at that stage.
And also worth finally pointing out that if you are in a situation where you've got a non-UK resident company owning residential property, that disposal is subject to non-capital gains
corporation tax regime.
Sorry.
It's now the non-resident corporation tax. Yeah, it's all getting a bit tricky for companies that still own
and
properties.
So that is then subject to rates of corporation tax, and there has been some speculation about those increasing, at least in the short term. So
yeah, I think if anyone's looking to de-envelope a property, you want to be doing that as soon as you possibly can, because that is probably only going to get harder. Thanks again for listening to Death and Taxes, a private client podcast from Burgess Salmon. You can find out more about Burgess Salmon and our team, burgess-salmon.com, or on our LinkedIn page. Our next episode will cover the tax and property issues associated with selling development land, so don't forget to subscribe, and thanks again for listening. Cheers.